Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's the Ken Carman Show with Anthony Lima. I'm Danny Cunningham filling in for the guys. And joining me now, of course, as you hear that music, you know it is the one. It is the only Daryl Ryder. Of course, Daryl is brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Good morning, Daryl. How are you today?
Oh, it's QB 40 time.
Oh, yes. Bailey Zappe, quarterback number 40, to be starting a game for the Browns since they returned to action since 99. I know after spending the day with you yesterday, this is not surprising news to you.
Nope.
This is not something that everyone should be looking forward to. But how did we get here?
It's been a long, winding road that has taken 26 years. This is a situation. Brown's just taking a look at Bailey here. I don't think that there's anything further that they need to learn about Dorian Thompson-Robinson. They've seen Bailey Zappe on the practice field, obviously. They know what they saw on film from his time with the New England Patriots, but now they'll get a front row seat to it Saturday in Baltimore, and I think we all know how that's going to go. But you certainly don't want to endanger the draft position right now by risking a good game from Dorian Thompson-Robinson. That's all I could think about. Like,
you think that's a risk?
No, I'm being completely facetious when I say that.
Yeah.
Watching DTR is painful. But I don't know if Bailey Zappe is going to be any less painful tomorrow in Baltimore. But we shall see.
Well, there's been a lot of pain at the end of seasons for Browns throughout their new history, I should say. So you know how this works here, Daryl. We have a new starting quarterback in the final game of the regular season. We've had several of them. They've all been terrible. I need you to power rank your top three quarterbacks for the final game of the regular season for the Cleveland Browns ever.
I don't know.
Give me the music.
Here we go. I'm going to go number three, Jeff Driscoll.
Wow, I would have thought he might have been higher.
Number two, the great Nick Mullins.
That was not week 18. Does not count.
It was not week 18?
No, that was Monday afternoon football against the Raiders. It was the COVID game.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
right.
That was not week 18.
Then guess who we have to put in there?
Austin Davis, Connor Shaw.
Yes, Austin Davis is going to go in there. And then all-time number one week 18 awful starting quarterback, Connor Shaw.
Wow. Bruce Gretkowski was robbed, guys. I thought Bruce would have been on the list.
Well, you said top three. He was going to be number four.
Okay. Wow. But we will see. Maybe if we do this again next week, Bailey Zappe's on this list. It's fascinating.
He has a chance.
He does.
He can play his way into the greatness of the Driscoll, Gretkowski's, the Shaws, the Davises. I just hope that Bailey doesn't have to introduce himself to anybody in the huddle tomorrow.
Well, I would think because he's been around, they all know who he is.
Well, I don't know about that. Let's not get carried away here, you know.
That's true. I mean, you never know with this franchise. So does he have to play well to get into the top three, or does he have to play poorly
three? No. He's got to lay a rotten egg tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that the chances of that happening.
I don't think it's good. I'm not all that concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very confident about the Browns potentially having a top two draft pick.
Yeah, I think that is in the cards for them. Something that also could be in the cards for them, Myles Garrett. So defensive player of the year, it sounds like is something that's still on the table. It doesn't necessarily sit the best with me considering this team is on its way to being 3-14. But Myles has been really, really good this year, without question.
Yeah.
I think he is one of the best players on the defensive side of the football in the entire sport. Like, that's just, those things are given. But are you with him when he said yesterday he thinks this is the best season he's had?
Well, he is just as good, if not better, than he was last year. And that's saying something. But, it, you know, as far as, well, the team is bad, so that taints it. Well, I mean, they had nine guys mentioned for the Pro Bowl yesterday.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily agree that all nine guys were worthy of recognition. I think there was some name recognition included in the in you know, those alternate bids that were received. But, you know, when it comes to Myles Garrett, I thought Kevin Stefanski articulated it pretty well when talking about the volume of double teams that he has to face, the fact that he doesn't get penalties called to help him out, and you know, get teams to, you know, be a little more careful when it comes to the blatant holding and tackling that he deals with on just about every snap and the attention, and the fact that he is still able to have the pressure win weights that he has, the sacks, the tackles for loss that he has, the impact that he has. Yes, there are other guys, T.J. Watt, who might make splash plays, but like the consistency of those, not as great as you see from Miles at times. So I think he deserves consideration. Hendrickson of the Bengals, who, you know, got a ton of fan Pro Bowl votes. You know, I don't know that he had a better season than Myles Garrett has had, right? And he's, you know, in consideration. So it's going to be interesting to see if Myles can repeat. I don't think he will, but I do think that there is a case to be made because he is, in my view, at least right now, the best defensive player in the game.
So I'm with you as far as all that goes. I don't think he's going to repeat. I think he deserves to be in the conversation. I think he's had a really, really good season. But the thing that I keep going back to is if this guy is this good, and he is, how come the defense has been what the defense has been this year, Daryl?
Because they have 10 other guys on the field.
At least one of those other guys has been pretty good in Denzel Ward.
Yeah, well, then that leaves you 9 other guys. You know, the defensive line has been good in spurts outside of Myles Garrett. You know, the secondary has been good in spurts outside of Denzel Ward. But the biggest reason for this defense not being good, at least from my point of view, just the chunk plays that they've given up, the explosives. I haven't added it up, but I know that there have been a ton of them. There, at one time, it was a 3-to-1 ratio. Browns explosive plays allowed by the defense versus Browns explosive plays racked up by the offense. And you just, that's not winning football. You can't win when you have a 3-to-1 ratio in that category with your defense giving up 3 times as many explosive plays as your offense is, you know, putting together. So, and, you know, you could go Butch Davis and say, well, Danny, you know, if they take away those explosive plays, this defense was really, really, really good this year.
Well, then that misses Lincoln. How was the play?
Right. You can't do that. So that for me has been the difference on that side of the ball. It have been those big plays.
I also do wonder how much, and I talked about this a little bit earlier. I'm curious your opinion of it. I do wonder how much the defense has suffered because, one, they gain no belief from what the offense is able to do. And I do think that at times this season, no matter who the quarterback has been, whether it's been Deshaun, whether it's been Jameis, whether it's been DTR, now, of course, we will see it be Bailey Zappe on Saturday. Right. I think that offense has put them in some bad spots, too. And I just wonder how much of that goes into the defense struggling at times and realizing, hey, we can't hold up. We can't do the job that we're being asked to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be exhausting at times, right? When the defense does get a key stop or get off the field and the offense can't do anything. The inability of the defense to create more turnovers. They've had opportunities this year. The ball just hasn't bounced their way. And if some of these defensive backs could catch footballs, they'd probably be wide receivers and not defensive backs. So that's just the way she goes at times. So it's just it's been a frustrating year all around. But yeah, the inability to create additional turnovers, the fact that they have to run back out there at times in such rapid fashion because the offense has been incompetent and can't do anything. Yeah, that'll wear a team down. There's no question about that.
Well, we know that Kevin Stefanski is safe. At least that's what we've been told. We've been told Andrew Berry is safe.
Yeah.
Will there be other changes to this staff? Because one of the stories from this season that we forget about at this point, but was Kevin Stefanski giving up play calling in handing that over to Ken Dorsey. Is there going to maybe be a change in that area?
Oh, I think that two coordinators potentially could not be, may not be here for next season. And Ken Dorsey and Bubba Ventrone. I could see a scenario where Mike Vrabel gets a head coaching job and the Browns just say, go ahead, Bubba, go, you can go be with Vrabes. Because his special teams units have been really disappointing in his time here. This has not produced the results that I was expecting. And look, maybe, Bubba can't go out and play anymore. And maybe I was unfairly expecting something else, but, I thought the return game was going to be better. Return game stinks, quite frankly. It's not that great. You've had penalties this year where the punt team didn't even line up correctly. Dustin Hopkins
turned into a pumpkin.
Yeah, I mean, he's not been good. And they've not been able to fix him. So, I think the two coordinator changes could be made. I think offensive line, when Mike Vrabel's basically coaching the offensive line, that's not great for Andy Dickerson. I realize he's not Bill Callahan and you can't expect him to be, but that's the standard, right?
Right.
So I think that position could be looked at as far as coaching changes go. And, there'll be a couple others where, guys will get, poached, get opportunities to begin the process of moving up the coaching ranks, if you will. So there'll be some natural departures as well. So, yeah, I mean, the coaching staff, I do not expect to return whole for 2025.
If there is a new offensive coordinator, and I guess even if there isn't, but do you anticipate Kevin Stefanski taking play calling back over next year? Or is that something that when you give it up, that's kind of time, that it's just kind of over and you don't get that power back?
I think Kevin does a good job calling plays.
I agree with you, and I don't think he ever should have given it up. I'm not saying that was the right move, but I'm curious if it's more likely he is calling plays next year again than not.
Well, here's one thing that I've noticed since he gave up the play calls. There have been a lot more reactions and looks of just complete disbelief and exasperation on his face between plays. And that's not something that Kevin Stefanski's known for.
Right.
He is known for being stoic, even keeled, expressionless, right? I mean, how many times do fans call our radio station yelling and screaming, why doesn't Kevin Stefanski show any emotion? We need a head coach that's passionate and cares and all that kind of stuff. Trust me, Kevin Stefanski cares, okay? Just because he's not breaking tablets on the sideline does not mean he does not care. But you have seen that. Because he's had time on his hands. You've seen the what on earth just happened, what on earth are we doing reactions from him. And I feel like, that's just not who Kevin is. And I think that him taking back play calling next year would probably be a smart move. But the play caller isn't... It's easy to say the play caller is the problem, right?
Right.
Notice the offense did not, there was a little period there where Jameis came in and things all of a sudden looked to be fantastic, right? But they didn't immediately start scoring points when Jameis Winston took over either. I think Jameis' first start, they scored 14 points. So, yes, there were times with Jameis on the field that the offense did look competent if he wasn't out there throwing footballs to the other team. But the offense was terrible. They need to scrap whatever it is that they did this year. They need to go. They need to let Kevin Stefanski run the offense that Kevin Stefanski wants to run. They need to put a list of three or four quarterbacks in front of Kevin Stefanski and say, you pick whoever you want to be quarterback this year, and you got him. We'll go get him. We'll make it happen. That's what needs to happen this offseason. None of this, you know, trying to fit a square peg in a round hole nonsense that they've been doing for the last 5 years that has led to them starting, which will now be 11 of the 40 quarterbacks have started under Kevin Stefanski. Like, so let Kevin pick whoever he wants, and then I think it becomes a little easier to hold Kevin responsible maybe for some of these offensive results.
Last thing, Daryl, but there was another update with the Browns and the future of where they're going to be playing their football games. What's the latest with that?
They have exercised the purchase option that they secured last year for $20 million. They wrote another check on December 31st to secure that. And they have a couple more installments to make. And once they do that, they will own that 176 acres of land in Brook Park outright. And so that is obviously, it's an important step moving forward. We knew it was going to happen once they made the announcement that they were going to pursue the Brook Park Dome and Development Project. But now that they have officially secured control of that land, that is a pretty significant hurdle for them to cross. And now all the focus and attention can turn to working with the politicians, assuming they're willing to answer their phones and have meetings with the Browns to begin the process of you know, moving this project forward.
Well, we will see how this will all shake out. Certainly a very interesting thing to follow. Daryl, thank you so much for the time this morning.
You bet. Enjoy the regular season finale, folks.
At 4:30 on Saturday, we all can't wait. Daryl Ryder, of course, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Kevin Stefanski should take back play calling next year. That is Ian Rappaport audio courtesy of NFL Network. That report was first from Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic that Mike Vrabel will be interviewing with the New York Jets today on wherever their facility is. I don't know if it's actually New York, New Jersey. That does not matter. The New Jersey Jets today. He will be interviewing for their head coaching job. Of course, Vrabel was on staff with the Cleveland Browns as a consultant this year. I think that he's somebody that will be getting a head coaching job. And I think the way that this affects the Browns is he will, in all likelihood, be taking somebody or somebodies from the Browns coaching staff with him wherever he ends up, whether that's New York, whether that's another opening that arises this offseason. I don't know where Mike Vrabel is going to be. If I were him, I would not want to go to New York, but that's neither here nor there. But I do think that this affects the Browns because their coaching staff will look different next year. And I think part of it's going to be because Mike Vrabel is going to take somebody with him. Maybe that somebody will be special teams coordinator Bubba Ventrone.
Bye, Bubba.
Maybe it'll be Ken Dorsey. I don't know who it's going to be.
Well, he's got the tie with Jim Schwartz.
Right. I don't think the Browns are, even though defensively the Browns have underachieved this year, I don't think that they're willing to let Schwartz walk away, right? Because for a coordinator to leave, the Browns have to be okay with it.
Right.
It's not one of those things where, you know, say he wants to hire an offensive line coach, whether it's with the Browns or someone else, and make that person the offensive coordinator. Their existing organization can do nothing to stop it because it's a promotion. But lateral hires can be stopped by organizations, and I do think that the Browns probably would not stop Bubba Ventrone leaving. But if Jim Schwartz were wanting to go be the defensive coordinator for Mike Vrabel, that's where I think the Browns would probably have issue.
I actually want Vrabel to want a position coach because it tells me, hey, it wasn't all horrible.
I don't think it's a bad diamond in the rough. Yeah. I think that would actually be a good thing, saying, hey, because you do.
He's probably the most respected, not employed NFL coach right now.
Oh, without a doubt. And
even,
I think that a lot of people across the NFL feel
more than Belichick as far as like, well, a future.
Future, yes, you know, of course. Not all time.
Right.
Obviously.
Although he did out-coach him in that playoff game.
He did do that. People don't forget, Owen. People don't
forget. I will never forget.
I remember watching that on my couch. I was living in Minnesota at the time. Like, wow, Mike Vrabel's handing it to Bill Belichick right now. It was awesome. But I do think it's a sign of a healthy staff. It's a sign of a good staff for assistants to be poached. And having Mike Vrabel in the building for the year that he spent here could lead to that. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know what positions it could be. I think the special teams coordinator, Bubba Ventrone, makes some sense. I don't think they'll let Jim Schwartz leave. And I think that one way or another, Ken Dorsey could be gone. And just in talking with Daryl Ryder about that last segment, I think it makes a lot of sense for the Browns to move on from Ken Dorsey, make him a one-and-done offensive coordinator. I think it makes a lot of sense for the Browns to have Kevin Stefanski calling plays again next year, because over the course of his tenure here, I think that's kind of the thing that he has done best, and I think that's the thing that I'd like to see him get back to doing.
And you guys talked about like a guy going from being a play caller to not being a play caller. Does he take it back? Andy Reid's done it. Now, his coordinators have moved on to head coaching jobs, but when Nagy went and took over Chicago, Andy Reid took back the play calling.
Instead of giving it to Eric Bieniemy at that time, right?
Correct. And he did it with Doug Peterson, too, as an offensive coordinator, where he kind of took it and went back in. Now, Andy Reid's...
Andy Reid.
Yeah. I mean, he's the best in the game right now.
I feel like that's a bit of an exception to the rule, though, in some senses, because...
But the thing, you know, Brian Billick's famous for saying the thing that gets you hired is the thing that gets you fired. And the thing that got Kevin Stefanski hired was his play calling, right?
Right.
Being a play caller, being a guy that has held every offensive, you know, position, coach position, worked all the way up, was with the Vikings for over a decade, and then, you know, came here and I don't like to talk about the two-time coach of the year thing anymore, but he won it because of his play calling.
Right, because of what they were able to do offensively both in 2020 and last year.
I don't think there's a problem with him taking it back and finding another guy that can mesh with him more like Van Pelt did than what Ken Dorsey has been this
year. I wonder if Van Pelt could be back. I wonder if that could be a realistic...
Especially if they blow things up in New England.
Yes. Like I like Drake May as a quarterback, but let's be real. Things didn't go well there with the Patriots. That could be a staff that's looking at one and done and some turnover there. I wonder if Van Pelt is a realistic option to come back, because I have no reason to believe, while the Browns moved on from Alex Van Pelt, I have no reason to believe that his relationship with Kevin Stefanski suffered because of it. And if that's the case, then you do see Kevin Stefanski calling plays again.
Well, there could, you know, even if maybe personally he took it, yeah, I would take it bad. I mean, the guy owned a house here. He wasn't just, you know, renting.
Right.
He was here for, you know, he had planted roots in Northeast Ohio and has to move. I'm sure there'll be something, but when it gets to professionalism and all that, they both seem to be pinnacle of professionalism to me.
Right.
Stefanski and Van Pelt. And I think there could be an agreement there. Time will tell on that stuff. Hopefully we'll know by Monday if we're making changes.
Yes, we will know soon. I do wonder how much of that situation was trying to get the most out of a quarterback, in which they will not be trying to get the most out of that guy anymore, because that guy stinks and everyone can realize it. 216-474-0092. Larry and Elyria, you're next up on the frame. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, Danny Owen? How you guys doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Fantastic. Yeah, I listened to the interview there with Daryl. I, you know, 1,000% agree with him. I go back, Coach Stefanski, get the running game back together, find a good running back in a draft, and more than run, they need some other, you know, wide receiver to look at that position also. But I totally agree with him. Establish the run, play action off of that, and the quarterback position, you guys, Dan, that's the key, though. I mean, you got to have a quarterback and utilize the whole offense. I mean, everybody. And I don't know, it's going to be hard to decide, but I know you, I was talking to you guys about Kirk Cousins, but I know I like Justin Fields. I get that too, but I know you're going to say he doesn't fit the system. But is there a possibility, you think, Danny, that if Coach Stefanski got Justin in here, and try to make him work under center, possibly, he might be able to work out or not?
I mean, maybe. And Larry, I appreciate the call. I don't know what Justin Fields' NFL skill set necessarily looks like in his peak form. And I think a lot of that is not necessarily Justin Fields' fault, because you look at the way that he was handled in Chicago, And I know, Owen, you just got done talking about Matt Nagy, but that guy did not do Justin Fields any favors with the Bears. And I think that his development was stunted a little bit. But I also look at it and say, you know what? If Pittsburgh could pick which quarterback was better for them this year, not just for this year, but for the future, they would have preferred Justin Fields have gone out and grabbed that job by the throat and taken command of their offense, because that would have been the best option. Maybe not for this year specifically, because Russell Wilson has been good, but that would have been their easiest path forward in the future. But because of Russell Wilson's age, this is not a long-term solution. Justin Fields could have been. So the Bears giving up on Justin Fields is one thing, but then watching the Pittsburgh Steelers do the same, not give up on him, but also realize, hey, if he were the quarterback of the future, I think things would look different in Pittsburgh right now than they do. So that it concerns me once if a guy is given up on by multiple organizations, especially when one of those organizations is a team that, you know, we don't like here, but I think we do have to have a healthy respect for the way that the Steelers have operated. So I think that gets a little complicated. I don't know if he's the answer. I like him as a lottery ticket, but I don't know that putting him under center is the way to do it. 216-474-0092 if you want to jump in. That's 216-474-0092. The college football playoffs continue to roll on. It is the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima. I'm Danny Cunningham filling in for the guys right here on 92.3 The Fan. And now we head on out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline to bring in Joshua Perry, a member of the 2014 National Championship team at Ohio State, and now a college football analyst for NBC Sports covering the Big Ten. Joshua, thanks so much for taking time to join us this morning. The place I have to start is with the Rose Bowl, with Ohio State, with how good they looked against Oregon. And the question that I come away with watching that game is, why did that team not look like that until that game?
Well, thanks for having me. It's so funny. And I think it's kind of one of the conversations that Ohio State fans are having on social media right now, where it's like, you know, Ohio State loses to Michigan at the end of the regular season and everybody's going crazy. There's some people that are calling for Ryan Day's job. Folks are looking for changes. They're like, you know, if the team that we saw against Michigan goes into the playoffs, there's no shot. And then the Tennessee game happens, and then the Rose Bowl happens. And it's like, this is why people were upset, is I think we all understood that the top end of this Ohio State team was Will Howard dealing the ball the way that he is, Jeremiah Smith being the best player in college football, and you got Emeka Buka and Carnell Tate around him. The run game starting to pop when the pass game gets going, so Trevion Henderson can break off big runs and Quinshon can get you the tough ones. And that defense causing havoc. They played Oregon the first time, didn't get a sack. They had 8 sacks in this one and 13 TFLs in the game total, limited Oregon in negative, I think, 23 rushing yards for the game. All that to say, it's like it was two different things. And I think there is that question of what happened. Some people would say that all that matters is making noise in the postseason. And so, like, you know, if you don't have your best game plan throughout the regular season, you're holding things back. Like, it is what it is. I would say that nobody is sandbagging in their rivalry game. And so there is this big question of, like, you know, did he just walk into the trap of getting out of the game plan? So, you know, kind of you weren't yourself. You didn't bring your best. Regardless of any of that, when the game plan is on point, you get a little bit extra time to prep for these games, but you just lean into where you're really good as a team. This Ohio State team is nearly untouchable. I think Texas is going to be a pretty good challenge for a number of different reasons, but I still think Ohio State, based off of what we've seen the last two games, probably can walk into that one and end up winning it by 2 touchdowns.
I think that is absolutely a possibility, and the thing that I keep coming back to is that Michigan game, because as we've talked about, that was an entirely different team. But I do wonder, say Ohio State makes a couple of field goals that were very makeable throughout that game and gets one more stop against Michigan, wins that game, goes into the Big Ten championship game. Do you think that this version of Ohio State is ever unveiled without that loss?
I think that you get a good version of Ohio State in the playoffs. So I'm not exactly sure that you get this one. Like, this is the super high urgency. We're trying to prove everybody wrong. They said a bunch of things about us that we take exception to, and we have to go out there and prove to everybody that, you know, we're the best roster, the best team, the best coaching staff in college football. I really do think that Ohio State did fall into this trap of they've been calling us soft, and they don't think that, you know, that we can play a game in a physical way and beat them. And so we're going to bang our heads against the wall. And I know Michigan folks would be like, oh, you know, we played a too high shell and we bracketed Jeremiah, and that's why. Look at what Tennessee did. Look at what Oregon tried to do. Everybody's been doing it. Ohio State had the answers for it. I think they ran into this trap of we're going to try to punch Michigan in the mouth and we're going to run into, you know, two first-round D tackles. And after that game, they said, we're just not going to do that. And we don't have to do that. And we don't care what anybody says about us if we're just getting the ball to where it needs to go. So to answer your question, I still think that they would have had really good game plans. I think that the Michigan game plan was kind of an aberration. But there is this level of intensity and, like, you know, like foot on the neck of the opponent right now that I don't think we get if there wasn't this whole, you lost to Michigan 4 years in a row and you didn't make a Big Ten championship and you really have to prove it to us now.
What type of challenges will Texas present for this Ohio State team?
So I think Texas is very good on defense. I like their front seven a ton. They've got guys in the interior, on the edges, and that linebacker that I think can be problematic. They're strong, they're big, they're athletic. So as we've seen with Ohio State, right, like the big question is on a week-to-week basis, is that offensive line going to continue to be able to play the way that they've played toward the end of the year, in postseason in particular? That's going to be the question there. I think they also have a very good secondary. The trouble is, I'm not exactly sure that anybody can actually guard Jeremiah. Like, I just right. don't know what the game plan is. So, regardless of how – and again, when I say really good secondary, I'm talking about, like, you know, top three, top five player in college football in the secondary back there. So, you can have that conversation. I'm just not sure it works. I think their offense is talented. I think it is very predicated off of Sark being able to call great plays. I think he is one of the great play designers and sequential play callers in college football. First 10 plays of the game, got to be on high alert. We saw what he did against Arizona State, but, you know, that first 10-play script is going to be really good. Same thing coming out of halftime when he makes the adjustments is going to be very good. But I don't think that they have wide receivers that are great at winning one-on-one outside of the play calling. They've been all banged up in the running back room. Now their offensive line room is banged up. And Quinn Ewers, for all the talent that he has, He likes to place the football. He doesn't drive it into windows. He doesn't drive it out to the sidelines. The ball hang in the air. And I don't think any of those guys on their offense like being hit. The way that Ohio State has been playing on defense has been aggressive. It's been physical. I watched Caleb Downs come from the secondary and smack somebody in the face. Lathan Ransom is out for blood every time he's hitting somebody. Cody Simon wants to inflict pain. The same thing with Jack Sawyer. Other guys on that defense, and I think that can be the edge there. So I think this one could be a game where points might be a little bit more at a premium than what we've seen with Ohio State in the offense over the last two games, because I do respect Texas on defense. I also saw Arizona State make some plays as the game wore on because right. they were able to lean on them and grind them out a little bit, and I think Ohio State can make that their edge. I don't think Texas wants to be hit that hard early, and I don't think that they want to play the game like that.
Why do you think Texas struggled to put ASU away? Because, you know, you mentioned the opening script that Sark had, and we saw Texas get off to such a fast start in that quarterfinal game, but then you look up and all of a sudden, you know, Arizona State's making a game of this, and then it goes into overtime, and Quinn Ewers has to convert on a 4th-and-13. Why was Arizona State able to come back? Why couldn't Texas slam the door shut earlier in that game?
I feel like Texas is what people like to say Ohio State is, right? Like the narrative about Ohio State not being a tough, gritty team. I think that's what Texas is. I think that when you constantly punch them in the mouth, they don't like it. After every big play for Texas, you know, there was a guy who's like banged up, right? Like that stands out to me. Quinn Ewers will duck if he's under pressure, like that kind of thing stands out to me. And so I do think this idea of Arizona State being this underrated team who their superpower kind of had to be them just being junkyard dogs allowed them to come back in that game. Now, once again, I got a lot of respect for Texas as a program, and in the moments where they needed to, like they brought what they needed to bring. But I don't think that's the way that they want to play the game. Like, if they could script it perfectly, I think they go out there and they out-athlete people, and they just, you know, they paid $20 million for their roster just like Ohio State. I think they just want to let the guy shine. And so if Ohio State brings this mentality that they've had the last two games where like I mentioned, they cracked Nico's helmet twice against Tennessee. And then in this Rose Bowl game, they were knocking guys out of the game. I think if they bring that, Texas is not going to, they're not going to want to have to play the game that way.
Right, right. And then last night we saw Notre Dame beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl to advance to the other semifinal against Penn State. What did you take away from Notre Dame beating Georgia last night?
First off, I'm loving Northern football right now, and I'm loving all the narratives
Isn't
that are coming from with these matchups. But it is phenomenal because forever we had to hear people from down south, their fans and their media, just kind of turn their noses up at us and tell us that we can't play football and we don't know what good football looks like. And they tried to do it at the beginning of this playoff. And it's nice to finally see, our teams from this region shining. Notre Dame is so interesting to me. Great defense. They play really hard. I like their secondary a ton. They've been banged up front, but they keep rolling guys through. I like the resolve that they have. Offensively, very defined in terms of who they are as a team. And I think it mattered the whole year after the NIU loss, but in particular against Georgia. Riley Leonard is the most interesting thing to me because I think he is a great football player, but I don't think he's a very good quarterback, right? Like, you go out in the quarterfinal game, throw for 90 yards, really can't affect the game with his arm, and it's not all his fault. I don't think the wide receivers for Notre Dame are great. I think they have a very defined path to how they have to win games. The biggest thing is nobody's really been able to stop them, knowing that it's the Riley Leonard show and that it's going to be Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price and those guys really getting it started there. But ultimately, I do think it's going to be a very intriguing matchup with Notre Dame and Penn State. Penn State, very good defensive front, could give Notre Dame some issues on offense. I don't think that Penn State is going to be able to attack Notre Dame's secondary because I don't like the Penn State wide receivers. So it's kind of this interesting back and forth of two teams that I think are very good, very talented, have a defined personality for what they are, but also have some pretty obvious flaws to how they get the job done and how they overcome those flaws to try to make it to a national championship game.
So far in this postseason, we've seen every team that was favored to win their game by the point spread win their game. But that's also meant that we saw all four teams that got a first-round bye lose in their first bowl game that they played as part of the playoff. What kind of changes do you think, if any, should come from the way that this postseason has gone?
Yeah, the interesting thing, and I think everybody's kind of on board with this, We got to eliminate this conference championship being tied to a first-round bye. All due respect, no shot in hell that Boise State should have had a bye. It's just, I don't think that should have been the case. And Arizona State, for as well as they played, I don't think that should have been the case either. And so when you have these teams that are not properly seeded, you have these matchups that can be lopsided or don't make a ton of sense. And so I think that needs to be addressed. The other thing that people have brought up, and I don't think it's as big of a deal as they're trying to make, is they're like, oh, well, the teams who had the buys were out for, they were off for too long. They weren't off for that much longer than teams that did not play in a conference championship and had to play in the first round. So I would take all of that with a grain of salt. The other thing that needs to happen, and I don't think it's going to, and as a matter of fact, I think it's going to go the other way, which I think is a shame. Give us eight teams, right? I think the idea that seeds 5 through 8 are the teams that are all in the semifinal can justify this idea that the college football playoff probably needed to expand a little bit, and especially with NIL and the transfer portal, and the way that you cannot hoard elite talent to just a few teams. Those guys are allowed to move now. You do have more teams that I think are viable to win a title. And so if you expanded it out to 8, I think it would make more sense from a competitive standpoint. It would give the teams Ohio State and Penn State in times where typically they've only struggled with the best teams in the country. Those teams have an opportunity to go pursue a title. Moving that thing all the way out to 12, it was literally okay, we could pick the teams that they picked, and ultimately I'm fine with the teams that they picked. But then it's also what about this flawed Alabama team? And what about South Carolina who got beat by Illinois in the bowl game? And what about Lane Kiffin because he wants to complain and whine? And I don't think we should ever be entertaining those conversations for teams that are ultimately pursuing the most important thing in the sport of college football, which is the championship.
But Joshua, if we cut it down, we can't talk about Alabama losing five games and still being the best team in the country, right? That's the best part.
You know, that was one of the most frustrating conversations to have with any. So, like, let me just break it down for everybody. This is a team whose quarterback was wildly inconsistent, but like literally will throw you three interceptions against an unranked team, and it's like, okay, like that's something. But then it's like, if we put Alabama in this thing, they're going to have to go on the road. They were bad on the road this year, right? Like they could not handle it. It's not the same thing as when Nick Saban was there, but we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt because it's like, oh, here's the dynasty. And also these guys play football in the South. And so like every media personality is like, they need to be in there, but Indiana can't do it. Which by the way, like closer margin than Georgia and Notre Dame.
Yeah, no one's saying that this morning.
Well, like Indiana, the team who only lost to Ohio State and Notre Dame, who might be the two teams playing for a national title, like maybe they weren't actually that bad. Maybe they weren't, because I watched the way that Tennessee lost to Ohio State. Indiana looked much better than that team. Nobody had a problem putting Tennessee in there. This is why we need to not do what we do and have these crazy, wild overreactions. Maybe just wait and get a little bit of data and then take a step back and really think about the way that things actually happen, and then we formulate our opinions.
Joshua Perry is a college football analyst at NBC Sports and, of course, a member of the 2014 National Championship team at Ohio State. Joshua, thanks so much for making some time for us this morning, man.
Appreciate you having me. Happy New Year, and take care.
You as well. He appears, of course, on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Great stuff from him.